Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back with you for the rest of the week. Although yesterday was a successful Phillies day, Freddie Galvis, big hit. And one again. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. Sean Carey alongside. We're brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Afternoon, sir.
We often get questions about, you know, where is the suit today? In Myrtle Beach. It's really.
I could have sworn I found a pick from Hershey Park. His son was attempting to boogie board or boogie surf or something, whatever they call it. One of those wave rides.
Commentary for a different day, my man. Yeah. All right, so
that was not the suit attempting it.
No.
That's a completely different scene.
But it was really neat. He was wearing a suit the entire time. All right.
With the celly pressed against his face. Why? It's time to make another deal.
That day on the golf course, he was on the phone every second. Riley, Dave Ritchie looks over, he says, what are you trying to do, save the station? What are you doing?
That should not have surprised Chief at all.
And Jennifer Wakeman and I could not stop laughing. But then again, Jennifer and I couldn't stop laughing all day about everything. So, about everything. All right. Great to have you with us. And let's get to the big stories of the day. I did watch the basketball team workout the other day. Which meant I got a chance to watch Tony Carr and Lamar Stevens and Nas Bostic and Joe Hampton. It's a very interesting time out there watching them. They are the most athletic. That is the most athletic Penn State basketball team I've seen in my 35 seasons. 35 seasons, most athletic Penn State basketball team I've ever seen.
So if we go back in time about, what was it, 25-plus years, Nolan Richardson in Arkansas, they called it, what, 94 feet of hell?
Yeah, well, Penn State played a version of that team in 1996 in the NCAA tournament. And so I saw that.
Possibility this could fall into that kind of category, depending on the quickness up and down the floor?
Look, they're athletic. They run. I mean, it's run, constant movement, run. Carr is a natural point guard. He sees the entire floor. He sees everything. Stevens is as fine a finisher as I've seen. Joe Hampton, as we all know, Joe Hampton is coming off that torn ACL. But he's out there, and he's probably 85%. And I think it looks good. He has a really nice jump shot. And Nas Bostic is a junkyard dog out there. And yeah, you know, I think you still have Shep Garner, you still have Josh Reeves, you still have Terrence Samuel, you still have Peyton Banks, you still have Julian Moore, you still have Isaiah Washington. Isaiah's jump shot looks better than ever, but it certainly gave me a really good look at them out there. I was impressed. As for football, haven't had the up-close look at them because I would only be allowed to take a look at them during what would be a designated coach time. That's how I could do it with basketball, is a designated coach time. And but next week is Live for Life. Now, they've changed their routine just a little bit in June. They're doing the same work, but it's more balanced. In other words, spread out more over a period of time instead of into condensed work periods. That's a little bit of a change, which the players love. The players love it. I saw Josh McPherson, and I see Josh McPherson all the time anyway, because he's an intern working right next to me at WPSU TV. So I mean, I see Josh all the time. But I saw he and Marcus Allen, and I think it was Antoine White the other day, and all of them feel like, you know, they've really worked hard, got themselves into a really good spot, feel like they're in better shape than ever, which is a plus. A lot of extra time spent, quarterbacks, wideouts, running backs on 7-on-7 stuff. I mean, they've been doing a lot of stuff on their own. They can do anything they want on their own. And this is where your leadership surfaces on your football team. Your leadership surfaces at this time of the year. Same thing in basketball. Your leadership surfaces during the summer, which then translates into the leadership you see on the field or court during the season. So what are you seeing leadership-wise? Andrew Nelson is a major leader. He's a leader on that offensive line. So is Brian Gaia. Gaia and Nelson are the two leaders in the offensive line. You look at the wideouts, guy like Godwin, guy like Hamilton, they're leaders with the wideouts. Barkley is an absolute leader. Just by pure example and work ethic, he's a leader. McSorley is a leader. But so is Tommy Stevens. Stevens has some natural leadership qualities, too. Wortman is a leader. Kabinda's a leader. Bell's a leader. I think Schwann has some leadership in him. Marcus Allen's a leader. I think we'll find out in time that I see the qualities in John Reed that he's a leader. I see the qualities there. Now, he's just going into his sophomore year, so he still makes sure that he's deferential to older players. He asks a lot of questions, and that's what you want. But I also see a leadership quality in there. Leaders are the ones that in-depth buy into what's going on and have the ability then to shape that mindset for everyone else. So I see Tony Carr. Carr is a leader, basketball-wise. Samuel has some leadership qualities. Shep Garner does. I'll tell you, actually, above all, and it surprises me because I didn't see this in him, but Peyton Banks has become an important leader on the basketball sense. You want your coaches to lead, but I'll never forget, and it was 5 years ago, it's 5 years ago now, that unforgettable day in Eisenhower Auditorium where Mike Krzyzewski and Joe Paterno, and Reese Davis was the moderator of this, but it was the two great coaches talking about what it takes to get to that point. And it was Mike Krzyzewski. You know, I mean, now, with Joe, obviously I witnessed it and I heard him talk about it for years. So hearing him talk about it again was reiteration for me. I never, you know, and I always found it interesting, believe me, because I've found this part to be so important that's not really talked about that much, that intangible of leaders. But Krzyzewski, I had never heard talk in depth like this before, in part because I had not been around him. Now, I've told you about that exchange with Jay Billis where I said to him, I didn't realize Coach K was so funny. He says, funny. I was thinking the same thing. I never thought Joe would, I didn't know Joe was that funny. And that's because of not being around the respective individuals. So now back to the point on Coach K. He was talking about, as a coach, what a joy it was for him when they won the national championship and Shane Battier was the senior leader on that team. He said, I knew if there was a problem, Shane would take care of it. That goes back to remember the old thing what Joe Paterno said about Mike Reed and Steve Smear. If there was a problem, the two of them would say, Coach, we've got it. Or Joe, we've got it. Well, this is what Coach K was talking about, Shane Battier. If there was a problem, attitude problem, locker room problem, Battier would take care of it. And the next day, it would be taken care of. It was one less major thing for Mike Krzyzewski to not worry about, where he could then focus on something else that was important. When you have really good leadership that buys in and takes care of that kind of business, that then allows the coach to then not get overly concerned with that part of the plate and then can lock in on another part of the plate that can then make the football or basketball team better. Strategically, scouting, recruiting, something, without having to handle a problem. Someone has an attitude problem. I got it. I'll take care of it. And they take care of it internally. Right? Okay. Doesn't know the plays well enough. Hasn't spent enough time. Don't worry. I'll pull them aside. I'll take care of it. We'll run through it. I'll pull them aside and we'll go through it. You can't put a price on that as to what it means. And one of the things that interests me in when I'm at a practice is that when the players are on the sideline, what are they talking about? What I've been hearing around here for the last couple of years, football and basketball-wise, is this. All right, now I go into this gap, but he's playing in shaded over here. How do I handle that? Younger player to older player. Older player said, no, you got to handle it this way. You got to split them here down the way. And they're talking football. Or they're talking basketball. I didn't go. You didn't go wide enough on that 3-on-2, all right? Because you didn't go wide enough, you didn't leave me an angle to give you a bounce pass for an easy basket. You got to take it out wider. These are the conversations I'm hearing. That's why I know that they're in really good hands on both ends, because they're talking football and basketball when they're on the sidelines. They're not talking about other things. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
30 new Kias at just $101 under invoice. That's right, $101 under invoice, but only to the first 30 Kia buyers and only at Sunbury Motors Kia. I wanna see you in 2016 Kias will be priced at $101 under invoice. Plus all applicable factory incentives at Sunbury Motors Kia. But only to the first 30 Kia buyers, so you have to hurry in. Have a trade? We'll pay you top dollar for that as well. And did you hear Kia was just named the number one brand for initial quality in J.D. Powers & Associates initial quality study? Combine that with Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty.
Now
is the time to buy.
But you need to hurry in today.
This offer is only available to the first 30 buyers who purchase a new 2016 Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Hurry in and claim your Kia at just $101 under invoice.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
All right, great to have you with us. Here it is, July 7th, talking a little football and basketball with you. Michigan is going to play Notre Dame in the season opener in 2018. Two sides are making the announcement today. So there's a traditional rivalry that's being added to the front of the schedule. Made me wonder with the way the current schedules are. I know the season's long enough. But do you want to add, right now we're at 12 games, and that's where the cap is. You no longer have kickoff classics, pigskin classics that are played at the front that end up being an extra game. Yes, you have opening games, but they have to be part of your regular season schedule. The games at Cowboys Stadium, Reliance Stadium, they're whatever, they have a name to them, but they still count as one of your 12 games. And when I see Michigan's going to play Notre Dame at the front, the one thing we talk about is scheduling flexibility. And when you're not in the same, what we've had over time is we've had the erosion of rivalries because of the new conference alignments. Texas and Texas A&M no longer play football against one another ever since A&M went to the SEC. Missouri and Kansas no longer play basketball against one another because Missouri went to the SEC. Kansas stayed in the Big 12. Penn State and Pitt, of course, have not been playing each other in football except for four games, 97, 98, 99. Or was it? Yeah, 97, 98, 99, and 2000. They're going to play again next 4 years. And I'm wondering if there is a need, and maybe it's too much, to add a 13th game to allow that kind of scheduling flexibility for the opening weekend of a season. Now, that may be too much. But obviously, what conference realignment has done is it has eroded so many traditional rivalries, unless you happen to be in the same conference.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll talk about the NFL with Neil Coulong in a moment. But first, this day in sports history. 1937, during the All-Star Game, Earl Averill hit a line drive that broke one of Dizzy Dean's toes. Dean had been a dominant pitcher early in his career. In fact, he was a 30-game winner. In fact, he had been the last 30-game winner. He's the last National League 30-game winner. And the last one before Denny McClain won 31 games. Remember, we had Denny McClain on the show 2 years ago. This was significant because Dean, a competitor, tried to come back too quickly from the injury, changed his delivery or overcompensated because of the toe, and ended up ruining his arm. A guy many thought would be a 300-game winner easily in the majors ended up being a 150-game winner in the majors because he came back too quickly from an injury. In 1953, the Dodgers set a major league record when they got a home run in their 24th consecutive game. I think the Rangers hit a home run in their 17th consecutive game last night in their loss to the Red Sox. 1964, Shea Stadium hosted its first and only All-Star game. The only other All-Star game that the Mets hosted was one at Citi Field a couple years ago when Yoenis Cespedes won the home run derby. And it was also the last appearance in an All-Star game for Mariano Rivera. 1985, Boris Becker became the youngest and the first unseeded player and the first German player to win Wimbledon, winning the men's final in the state in 1985. What I loved about Becker is he dove all over the place. You're on grass. You can do more of that. But it was the all-out effort that you love to watch. 1990, Martina Navratilova won a record 9th Wimbledon women's singles title. What a player. And that is this day in sports history. Let's get you up to date on the Major League Baseball scoreboard as well before we get to Neil Coulon here. And in the majors today, Tyler Glasnow, by the way, making his debut today against Adam Wainwright. 1-1 top of the 5th at Busch, Cardinals, and Pirates. The Angels won today, beat Tampa Bay 5-1. Everything else is under the lights tonight, as opposed to being under the lights during the day, including the Phillies at Colorado this evening at 8:40, which would be an 8:05 airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Right? Or 8:15. No, 8:05.
Yep. 8:05, yeah. Adam Morgan will take a turn in place of Aaron Nola this evening, and Chad Bettis going for Colorado.
They don't want Nola pitching in that air when he's in a slump.
Got to get his head right.
Yeah. All right. In Rio, by the way, they're using helicopters and GPS to find trash. Okay, well, how about just walking along the shore? All right. a whole group of you.
Walking along the shore, you may find something else other than trash these days.
Yeah,
that's not a good thing. Oh, my goodness.
Golly. I'd say cancel them, but like, I can't afford the phone calls from the suit right now. All right. Neil Coulon, Le'Veon Bell made some news lately. Is it now at the point, Neil, where you as a reporter, after looking at social media, now have to listen carefully to the lyrics of rap music?
That's an excellent question. I'll admit I did, just to make absolute certain I saw whatever it is that everybody else saw. And I really didn't, to be honest with you. I could have been referring to a lot of things. And at the same time, last time I checked, most people that enter a job negotiation start well above what they'd accept. So to me, it's kind of much ado about nothing. He enjoys the side hobby, and I think that's cool. I've liked a couple of the songs that he's cut. I hope he doesn't demand $15 million a year. That put the Steelers in a pretty tough spot, but he's going to have a tough time getting that in the open market anyway. So it's nothing. It's a song.
Yeah.
It's why.
but part of your job was to just check it and make sure, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
It's what's interesting is that how often do you find yourself following social media, and have you ever been blocked by anybody?
Yes, actually. Interesting story, and I'm not making this up. I forget the guy's name, but a Steelers undrafted offensive tackle tweeted out video, how he obtained it, I don't know, of the Steelers rookie minicamp. a play he particularly was proud of, I guess. And I just made mention, somebody said something about the player in the video, and I responded on Twitter saying something to the effect of, watch how quickly this gets taken down, simply because the Steelers freak out anytime you post anything outside of standard for practice, which is understandable. It's their brand. They can protect it. There's a strategic advantage possibly in there. When you have players doing it, they're going to act pretty quickly, especially for an undrafted rookie. So right. I mentioned that, and the guy, he subtweeted me a couple times saying, you know, guys are just hating on me because, you know, I'm doing well and, you know, you can keep the jealousy. I was just like, hey, listen, okay? One, it's not a good idea to talk about things like this publicly. Two, I'm not hating on you at all. I'm giving you some advice. Don't post practice video. They're not going to like that very much. And you don't have much of a leg to stand on. You're an undrafted free agent. That said, look, I hope you're offensive player of the year. I really do. It has nothing to do with that. I'm just giving you some advice. Don't make it out to be like I'm the bad guy here. And he blocked me. So, whatever. I don't know who he is. I don't even know if he's still on the team anymore. But tell you what, I'll look it up. I'll find out who it was, and I'll let you know the next time I'm on.
That's good. That's a good story. I mean, it's, and you know, people get, I mean, they get sensitive about it. For you in reporting, Neil, how important is it? Are you able to get across the point to some people sometimes that, look, I'm just reporting. This is not personal. There's no malice involved here.
I don't think that's even possible for everybody to comprehend. It gives you the opportunity, though, to say, what I'm doing is telling you what he said.
I'm not saying it. He said it. That's why you have quotation marks. That's why those nifty things were invented. I didn't say that, you know, this player did this or that or the other thing. I find that to be especially prevalent among Bengals fans. Anytime you have any type of quote regarding Vontaze Burfict in particular, it's always, you're the idiot Steelers writer, bleep, 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 that, you know, thinks Vontaze Burfict is a bad guy. Like, I didn't say that he was a bad guy. I said that Marcus Gilbert seems to be trolling him on Twitter.
Right.
You know, it's Marcus Gilbert's problem, not mine. He's the one that's got to deal with him. I wouldn't say that if I was within 50 yards of Vontaze Burfict, but Marcus Gilbert's a lot bigger than me, so you can get away with that. That said, I mean, you really just, you have fans that have that level of passion. They feel like reporters are a part of the team that they cover. They're on their side, and you know, I'm sure many examples that you could show of a reporter that kind of suggests they are in their camp, and they do favor this over something else. And for a reporter, I mean, in my mind, I wrote a paper on this in college. I don't think objectivity is possible in sports media. I think in the end, the plain and simple definition of what you're doing is you're covering one side of it. Between the Steelers and the Bengals, I'm covering the Steelers. I'm not as interested in the Bengals' perspective on things. You want to show both sides of it, but my audience is coming to me to read about the Steelers, not the Bengals. So yeah. I'm not going to give them equal time. Therefore, I'm subjective. So it fans take that probably a step further than how I just described it and feel, you know, I'm not allowed to write anything negative about the Steelers. You try to give your take as best you can. And, yeah, I can totally see how bias comes into that. But, you know, in the end, a lot of people are on Twitter to do nothing but, you know, troll you and attack you anyway. And you just kind of remember that they're using funny-faced emojis and hiding behind screen names. And your life goes on.
But for example, you would put in something about the Bengals if it added context and perspective to what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, the more of it that you can tell, the better. You want to kind of show the genesis of whatever the problem is, or even better, their reaction. Using Vontaze Burfict again, he loves responding to that stuff, and it makes for, you know, it makes for great theater. Probably, I would say on Steelers Wire last year, honestly, 16 to 20 top posts of the year have something to do with the Bengals. It was that kind of year between those two teams, and social media is really just built for this kind of stuff. The Adam Jones videos after game, Roethlisberger going on the radio saying that Vontaze Burfict is trying to hurt me, all of these kinds of things are very much modern, real digital audience-based kinds of stories, and people eat it up, and you should. You go back to the 80s, you didn't get as much access to players speaking this candidly about these kinds of things. Or if you did, it was a one-time thing, and that was the one quote that you get for the next 2-3 years or something.
Ben Roethlisberger has his own radio show, and he plays the Bengals, you know, probably, it wouldn't surprise me, three times again this year.
Right.
How many opportunities is that for him to talk about Vontaze Perfect? You got to love that. From my position, I think it's great.
At this time of the year, how much does it slow down for you? Now, the Bell thing, of course, just happened and turned you into somebody who now loves rap. But how much does it slow down for you? Does it allow you to catch your breath, or do you have to be far more creative in coming up with angle?
It's both, really. You can't expect to keep dipping onto the same example. You can't expect the type of news
that would come out of Bengals Steelers Week.
Right.
But at the same time, it's refreshing in a way because there's only so much you're going to be able to do without really pandering. And to be honest, we're probably guilty of that, just like everybody is this time of the year. But you can do more creative stuff. You can do more outside the box, giving you a chance to be creative with the process and show people what you know about the team and you know, try to stimulate interesting discussion about the team. You'll always get the Le'Veon Bell rap song, the impending Marquise Pouncey issue with his birthday party, which is coming up in a couple weeks. You prepare for the more negative stuff. You know, we've talked about this before. You know, somebody's going to get arrested, so you kind of know those types of things are coming. It might be somebody on the team that you're covering. It might be somewhere else, but it's probably discussion fodder that NFL fans want to have in you know, the darkest period of the NFL calendar. So it's refreshing in the sense that you don't feel like, you know, bullets are flying over your head all the time for everything that you have to kind of keep up with. And it gives you more of an opportunity to do a little bit more long form stuff to show, you know, more of your knowledge or you know, to provide your audience some intrigue of what's going on. But it's all probably pretty boring. There's really not much that's there, and that's just what it is. It's not going to get more exciting in July.
And to be honest with you, Neil, today was really the first time, and I know when it was released you had to write about it, but today was the first time we really looked at the Steelers' schedule. I mean, actually looked at it. I had not really looked at it. When they released it, I'm like, yeah, whatever. And, of course, you had to write about it right away. Were you surprised by the lack of primetime games that the Steelers got in this thing? I realize they've got to spread the wealth, and I do realize that every team does get a primetime appearance, some of them on NFL Network. But were you surprised that they didn't get that many of them?
A lot of it depends on the schedule,
not only who you're playing, but who other people are playing. You know, I would think the Steelers playing the Bengals should be on primetime both times they play. And you'll forgive me. You're right. I wrote a ton about the schedule after it came out. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head, except they're playing Washington on Monday night to start
right.
the season.
Right.
I would think that'd be a marquee game. But at the same time, though, you look at it from the broadcaster's perspective, it almost seems like it's, you know, pretty much a mandate. Any NFC East team playing another one in their division is going to be a primetime game. You know, those are on so frequently. If the Cowboys are playing the Giants, you can understand why the Steelers-Bengals would get bumped back. If anything, I would say the real issue is the fact the Ravens aren't as intriguing as they have been in the past.
Right.
They're coming off a really bad season, and it's not like they drafted a real marquee kind of player. I mean, offensive tackle, for as much as they're paid, they're not, you know, mainstream media draws. Ronnie Stanley isn't going to get them a primetime game, you know, whereas if, say, a couple of years ago, if they were the ones that drafted Johnny Manziel and he's going to make a start against the Steelers, they're probably going to put that on national television. So it's an interesting rubric that they would go through for each week to determine, you know, who would be there and what. But the fact that the networks complain so much about, you know, having to set in stone at the beginning of the season what these games are, to the point where they all decided to do flex scheduling to kind of move the primetime games around. It shows how inaccurate it is to try to determine those things in March or April. I forget when exactly the schedule is released.
Yeah.
They have an opportunity to change that, and the Steelers are the type of team, if they're doing well and they're playing somebody else doing well, and there's intrigue in those games, you can almost think that most of the time they're going to get flexed into a primetime spot as
right.
well.
And that's a really good point, because obviously they get to the last month of the season, they can flex games. And I know the Steelers have one in primetime in the month of December, and then, of course, they have the Christmas Day game, but that's an NFL Network game at 4:30. between what will be some of the questions you'll want to ask right away when they hit training camp, Neil? What's something that's intriguing you that you'd like to find some answers in the first week?
I'd really like to see what Le'Veon Bell can do when he gets back. I'm still intrigued at the level of severity of the injury that he had. Really, what makes him a great player is his ability to bend and cut. And you can't think that's just going to come back automatically. So how much of a workload is he going to get right away? And along with that, you know, how does D'Angelo Williams feel? That's basically, he's going to get the same exact question that he had last year when he came to camp. But, you know, a guy kind of poised to have something of a breakout year is Marcus Wheaton. You know, Marcus Wheaton has been given multiple opportunities within that offense now to step up. And, you know, sometimes he's answered the call, sometimes he hasn't. But he's playing for a contract now, and he's got Martavis Bryant out of the way once again. He's a talented player. He's a great athlete. We've seen what he's capable of doing. Can he be consistent with that? Does he think he's going to get more than, you know, say, 2-3 targets a game? Can he get more? We have a lot to know about Ladarius Green. He's not even going to be ready to play right away, I don't think. So what type of role can he fill in the offense? Is he going to be able to block? Then from there, who's your starting nose tackle? You know, right. Is it going to be Dan McCullers? From what I've seen of Dan McCullers, I think I've shared this story with you in the past as well. He's really hot and cold when it comes to motivation. And I know defensive line coach John Mitchell has been all over him in the past about playing with that intensity, that mean streak all the time. He's kind of a big teddy bear type of guy. But when he gets angry, it's scary. He really is a force. They let Steve McClendon go, which is probably the right move. Is McCullers going to be that guy in the middle? I mean, even if he's only playing 12, 13 snaps, that's still 12 or 13 snaps out of 60 or so. You have to think that their base defense kind of depends on having a guy that can play that position. So, and from there, you get into the secondary, and I probably didn't mention that right away just because I've heard enough about the secondary to fill a couple notebooks. They'll be what they are. I don't think, really, I don't see why they're necessarily going to be vastly improved from where they were last year. They might be a solid unit. I think that's their high end. They're probably going to give up a few yards. You hope that they can rack up 48 sacks again if you want to see them, you know, succeed overall. That's what they're going to have to do. So can Bud Dupree use his hands? Can he, you know, find a way to fend off blocks from guys 50 pounds lighter than him? That's kind of the key. You're going to need to have that. Sure. You're going to need to have some outside linebacking production this year. Didn't really have it last year, so... Yeah, I think there are a lot of storylines for a team that really is kind of solid all around. I mean, there are, you know, deficiencies. I'm not saying 16-0 or anything, but right. this could be a 12-win team. It's very possible.
Yeah, no question. And one of the things I would look at when it comes to Le'Veon Bell, if Jack Ham has said this to me once, he's probably said it to me maybe 15, 20 times. He said Bell runs routes like a wide receiver does, where he cuts and makes – if Bell's rounding his routes, that would be a tip-off to me, Neil, that he's not so secure on it if he's rounding routes, because he doesn't round routes like most running backs do.
I'm going to use that. That's an excellent point.
And you're exactly right. That is a key thing for him. And it reminds me of one of my favorite highlights. It's not the Martavis Bryant 94-yard touchdown against the Bengals back in 2004. In that game, though, there was a play, the Steelers were driving in the red zone, and Bell came out of the backfield on play action, and the Bengals linebacker, I forget which one it was, but it wasn't perfect, was covering Bell and man, and Bell put a move on him. He must have left him stone-footed for like three steps. I mean, the guy was just completely fried. You look at the ability that he has to separate, and he is in that route. You know, you can, when you can bend and drive the way that he can, you can run very crisp, precise routes. And in his position, he's not going to have a cornerback covering him.
Right.
You know, I don't think there's a linebacker in the game that can cover him when he's healthy. So, yeah, I think that's a key point and definitely one that I'm going to watch now. So, thanks.
Neil, appreciate the time very much. As always, always enjoy the conversations.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong. Back with the second hour of the show in a moment. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.